Please lower your head and watch your step while boarding.
Welcome to the Attractions Podcast. You are all clear for dispatch. Have fun.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 115, of the Attractions Podcast, sponsored by Destinations of Character Travel. I'm Brittany.
And I'm Seth.
And we are here to talk to you about the latest and greatest in theme park news and more, as well as what's going on in our own lives. Seth, I hope you had a great Thanksgiving holiday.
I had a fantastic turkey day. Thank you so much. Yeah, got to get together with some friends, had way too much food.
Yep.
Spent a day recovering. Had more food. I got up this morning wondering, why are we recording a podcast? Because I should still be sleeping.
Okay, next time we'll have to check when Christmas and New Year's are and then plan
we'll have to see
release around schedule around there.
No, it was great. And I went almost a full week with hardly any theme park visits. I did pay one visit on the day before Thanksgiving over to Universal, and I had to nope out after about an hour.
No.
It was pretty intense. The crowds are definitely back. I think that this, when the numbers are all run at the end, I think they're going to say that this holiday season, this Thanksgiving, was as big or maybe bigger than 2019. It's a lot of people here in Orlando. So hopefully they're not bringing the Omicron variant to and from Orlando in their holiday trips. So
fingers crossed.
How was your Thanksgiving?
My Thanksgiving was good. All my family does not live anywhere near where we live, so it was just us doing our own thing. We went to one of our favorite local diners. They were doing a Thanksgiving special with like turkey and stuffing and mashed potatoes and all that good stuff. So we went and did that.
So much better than having to cook yourself.
Exactly. And then we caught a matinee of House of Gucci with like 50 other people who were doing the same thing on Thanksgiving.
Nice. I wanted to get out and see Ghostbusters, but I have not made it to the theater yet. Hopefully this week I can catch
that. I saw that one last week. I won't say anything. I don't really care here nor there about Ghostbusters. It just wasn't a nostalgia thing for me growing up.
Yeah.
But the third act will do something that you will either think is very sweet or you will find it ghoulish.
And I bet I know which one you fall into.
I'm conflicted about it because I see like what they were trying to do, but it also feels really weird. I don't know. We'll talk about it when you go see it.
We'll get around to it, sure.
Yes. But without any further ado, let's get into the news. And first up, we've got the Disney Classic Games Collection is... they've put out a re-release that includes The Jungle Book.
This came out previously with just Aladdin and The Lion King.
Yeah.
And now they're re-releasing it in an extended edition that also includes The Jungle Book plus some extra Aladdin content. If you are not an old school 2D platform gamer, the Lion King and Aladdin especially, but Jungle Book 2 were known as some of the best animated platformers of the 16-bit era. And one of the cool things about this collection is it lets you finally settle the question of which was better, the Genesis version or the Super Nintendo version. They're similar, the consensus, I think, is that Super Nintendo has slightly better graphics, but the Genesis version had tighter gameplay. You can try them out yourself. Personally, I could never finish any of these games.
Nope.
Because even though they were really cute and you would think they were made for kids, they were brutally hard. You had to have amazingly good precision jumping skills. So the cool thing is that these versions let you both rewind. So instead of losing a life, you can just back up to whatever bad jump you just made, or you can even watch a professional play it and then jump in and take over the game at any point to get you past some of the tricky parts. You know, this is, I think the Switch is probably where this kind of game is most at home. But you can also get it for the PC. Please, for God's sakes, get a gamepad if you're playing on a PC and don't try using a keyboard. And there's also last-gen Xbox and PlayStation versions, too.
Yeah. I got a review copy of the previous version of this that just had Aladdin and Lion King for Switch, and I tried it out, and it was so hard. And I had Sega Genesis versions when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
These and Toy Story, that one was especially difficult. I remember getting so upset at Lion King in particular because it's just not for children.
Right. Yeah. All you Gen Zs out there who think your Fortnites and your Minecrafts are tough video, you don't know what hard video games were. My generation grew up where you had a dot that was blinking next to another dot, and you had no idea what was going on. And no matter what you did, you lost. You never got to finish any of your games because they were just too hard.
And then when you die, Mufasa or Rafiki says something, and it's the same thing over and over, and it just gets drilled into your brain, and it's an experience for sure. But they have
some cool bonus features
like animations and behind-the-scenes footage that are all baked into the cartridge or the disc, which is really cool.
Yeah, and I think you also get to switch between the original pixelicious graphics or new high-res upscaled versions.
Yeah. And if you have the previous version of the game like me, you can buy the Jungle Book as DLC for $10.
Yay, add-ons.
Yes. and next up, this is an article about four facts of the Jurassic World Dominion prologue, but I just wanted to talk about the prologue.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been able to watch it?
Yeah, and I was really surprised reading these facts, because watching the prologue, I assume that they just clipped off the pre-credit sequence, that this was just the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
But apparently this was done specifically for viewing online. It happens right before the movie, but this footage is not actually part of the movie. So it seems like they put an awful lot of CGI budget into 5 minutes of material that's not actually going to make the movie. I think this might have been shown in IMAX in certain movie theaters before it came out online. I think there was some special screenings that I remember hearing about. But now everyone can watch it at home on their tiny screen.
Yes.
I don't know. It's kind of split. The first half takes place 65 million years ago. And we get to see lots of great dinosaur footage, but it's kind of interesting. The two things that I noted about that is one, they have added feathers or feather-like things to all of these dinosaurs. They even show the T-Rex, which we assume becomes the famous T-Rex from the Jurassic Park series, and when we see her 65 million years ago, she's got these like kind of
like
feathery
wispy
things, wispy. It's almost like kind of like hairs on her back and her head or back of her neck. But then when we see the T-Rex later, we see a modern day scene where it's rampaging through a movie theater, at the drive-in theater, which I thought was a lot of fun. They call it American Graffiti. The George Lucas film on the marquee, which was a nice little nod. But there, the T-Rex does not have its feathers. So I don't know. Maybe Dr. Wu edited those genes out because he didn't like feathers. Maybe it was an aesthetic thing.
Yeah.
But the other thing I noticed is that even though CGI has come so far, I still think the very first Jurassic Park looks the best. You see these shots of, you know, amazing detail in the textures and the lighting and stuff, but something about it doesn't all quite come together. I don't know if it's like the shadowing or the ambient occlusion or the way they composite it together, but it just doesn't feel real the way the first Jurassic Park movie way back, you know, 25 years ago did.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm looking forward to seeing the movie on the big screen. But it's an interesting way to go to spend that money on a 5-minute clip that's not actually part of your film.
Yeah. And I will say, going to Ghostbusters Afterlife, which you haven't seen, but a lot of their creature work is practical. It's puppets.
Yes.
Yeah. And I enjoyed that a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not going to knock CG creatures and things in movies, because that's just where we're at. And I don't even know if they could. I mean, they've done it before. I guess they could make something. If Universal can make a giant T-Rex and fight in an attraction, they could make something. But I thought it was very interesting to just make this and throw it out as like a one-off thing, unless we get more before next summer when the movie comes out. I really like the score, and it made me happy that Michael Giacchino came back to compose it.
Yes.
So that was cool.
And at Brian in the comments, I'm not crazy. They did show this before Fast 9. So people who I guess saw that in IMAX.
That was not me.
Got to see it. Nope.
But yeah, if you haven't seen this yet, go check it out. It's on YouTube. We have it linked in our article about it. Jurassic World Dominion comes out on June 10th, 2022. So if you haven't seen the new Jurassic World movies, you've got plenty of time to catch up.
Catch up, and then go ride the Velocicoaster.
Yes.
Honestly, the Velocicoaster is the best thing to come out of the Jurassic World franchise.
Wow.
Easily.
I need to do it. I need to do it. And then the next thing that came out this week that we wanted to talk about was the Get Back documentary from Peter Jackson on Disney Plus. Mm-hmm.
Which is really only theme park related, because it's on Disney Plus, which is owned by Disney, which also owns theme parks. But I'm a huge Beatles fan going back to my childhood. And I know I probably should have been a good Marvel fan and watched Hawkeye instead. I actually could have seen Hawkeye at the D23 convention, because they had it 3 days early or whatever for D23 people, but I decided to head home because I knew I could watch that.
Yeah.
So I haven't gotten around to Hawkeye yet. Sorry, I'm a bad Marvel fan.
That's okay.
But I've invested 6 hours of my life over the last 2 days in the first two parts of Get Back, and I'm really excited to watch the last 14 hours or so. How long is it? Here's the thing. This is like the way that Peter Jackson did the extended editions of Lord of the Rings, like with including every possible little detail from the books. That's been his approach to these Beatles documentaries. Like, he had, like, you know, 60 something hours of film, and I think he used 59 of them. But it's so cool. I mean, these are songs, even if you're not a huge Beatles fan, these are songs that are just kind of part of our cultural fabric that you sort of know, even if you don't know that you know them. And watching them be created from scratch, like, and not like, you know, sitting there methodically writing out music, but just like, you know, playing riffs, fooling around, improvising, and then all of a sudden it turns into, you know, this song that you know you've known your whole life. It's just kind of magical watching them and watching their interaction together. You know, I think everyone who has ever been a Beatles fan has really strong opinions about whose fault it is that they broke up, you know, who the leader was, who the creative one was, you know, what the heck was Yoko doing there. And this is just sort of raw, and it's so human. It like strips away all of the like gossip and the speculation, and you just sort of see them being people. I thought it was really great.
Yeah. One of my favorite things is Paul trying to get everyone to like be on task, like the reluctant leader.
It's absolutely like he is trying to be dad. And this all happens shortly after their manager, who was really influential, passed away. And they didn't really have a leader. You know, they were, so, you know, you see Paul struggling to try to get the other ones. You see, you know, George is very frustrated because he feels like he's not being taken seriously as an artist. John, you know, is like this trickster who is always kind of undermining whatever Paul is trying to do, just to sort of tweak him. But when they play, they look into each other's eyes, and it's like, you know that Yoko and Linda were not the great loves of each other's lives. Like, the two of them, like, are very obviously in man love with each other. When you watch them playing together, like, the eye contact is very intense. And then you've got Ringo, who appears to be either drunk or hungover for 90% of it. And he's just doing a gig. He's just like, you guys tell me what to play, and I'm just gonna sit here and do it.
My favorite thing is when they were running through a rehearsal, and I just saw him like staring off into space, like autopilot playing. I was like, he's full on dissociating right now.
Yeah, you can see he's just going to his happy places, you know. But yeah, this was originally supposed to be a feature film, and I'm glad that they turned it into this mini series because, as crazy as it sounds, like 3 hours would not be enough. I'm not even sure 9 hours is going to be enough when this is
No.
all done.
And the first episode is 2.5 hours, if that puts it into perspective for you. I will say though that the digital noise reduction is a little weird and almost looks bad in certain places. I understand why they did it, I guess, to just kind of make the footage look as good and clean as it possibly can. But there are some shots, especially when they're really pulled far away from the subjects, that it just does not look good.
Yeah, I mean, 16 mil. There's even a section in part two where they discuss about the fact that they're shooting all this on 16 millimeter. And that it's going to look terrible if they try to blow it up to 35, because it was originally intended to be a BBC TV show, and it was never intended to be seen, you know, on a big screen or high definition. So, I mean, it's not as good a restoration job as Peter Jackson did on the World War One footage when he made his documentary about World War One, but I for the most part, it's pretty amazing considering it's, you know, 50-year-old film that was never meant to be seen like this.
I will give it that. But it's a great
And
watch.
the sound is great. You got to crank it up.
Oh my gosh. And I'm only just I'm like three fourths of the way through the first episode, because we started it late last night. But I can't wait for more of those moments where you like hear a few chords and then you're like, oh, I know what song that is. Just to kind of watch them be birthed into existence, by total happenstance, just them trying to create a particular sound that they're after. It's really cool. So check it out on Disney Plus if you are interested.
Thumbs
Highly
up.
recommend. Two thumbs up from us. Over in New York City, they're getting a Soarin' style attraction set to open on December 15th.
Okay, is it just me or did this come out of nowhere?
It,
Because
absolutely
I
nowhere.
can't remember hearing any buzz, you know, no mention of this in IAPA. I'm not even sure who is manufacturing the ride system for this. But it looks really cool. I get up to New York a few times a year, and I am definitely going to check this out because it's a combination of a multimedia museum with a simulator attraction as kind of the grand finale. And they've collaborated with a lot of interesting partners, Fashion Institute of Technology, Broadway shows, to kind of create a walkthrough experience that takes you from a turn of the century subway station. It takes you a voyage through time, and shows off kind of everything about New York, from the finance, the skyline, to fashion, music, historical artifacts. The one thing that they have in their museum that I would really love to see is they have a jacket of Madonna's that was customized by the graffiti artist Keith Haring, which is kind of famous. And it all culminates in a simulator ride around Manhattan. set to music ranging from Frank Sinatra to Taylor Swift. That's an interesting transition. I'd like to see how they edit those together.
Why they wouldn't have put Alicia Keys,
right?
New York song?
You would think that would be in there. Maybe they couldn't get the rights. This is put together by a company called Running Subway that I am completely unaware of.
Yep.
And they blatantly say that they are ripping off Soarin' Over California. So good for them. They recognize their influences. And they shot, it's a 180 degree 40 foot projection dome with 8K footage and motion seats, but it's 46 people flying simulator, so that's about half the size of the Soarin' domes.
Mm-hmm.
So not sure who's manufacturing that. If anyone knows who's behind that ride system, let us know. It is Brian thinks it is Dynamic Attractions. Okay, great. So yeah, Dynamic has been getting into the standalone simulator business. I know they've got a few of them in Canada and around the country. So normally they are co-owners on those, and they usually put their name on them. So I have to check that out when they're. If you're in New York, you want to go ride it. It is actually pretty reasonably priced. You get the simulator and the whole museum and pre-show and everything for, scroll down a little bit, I believe it's
$24,
which, I mean, they just opened a flyover in Las Vegas, and I think that is about $35. So that's a pretty good rate. Anything in Manhattan is expensive, so.
Yeah.
If this ride was at Disney, you would pay $15 for the individual lightning lanes.
We always tie it back.
Exactly.
If you do decide to go, be sure to check the operating hours, the days that you're in town, because they are closed on Tuesdays.
Yes. No one does anything on Tuesdays in Manhattan. No. Don't you know that? Come on.
No, I'm never. I'm sorry. Kennywood, which is a theme park in West Mifflin, Pennsylvania, has announced that their kangaroo attraction has come out of retirement, and the votes on the new logo for it were a landslide for a vintage kind of look.
Yes, it's super mod. The typography, the color schemes is like straight out of the 60s. So yay to everyone who voted for it. Great, great choice. Apparently, it was about 80% in favor of the vintage as opposed to the updated look. So, I think a lot of people, this ride was originally announced as being retired last year, and they just recently announced that instead of retiring it, they're going to refurbish it, because there's a lot of unhappy longtime Kennywood guests. You know, that's a park that is all about tradition. It is definitely like a vintage trolley park style experience. And the kangaroo is kind of, I don't know if it's completely unique, but it's a very rare design where it's a flat ride. You know, it's basically just going around in a circle like a Dumbo. But instead of the guests controlling the height, the cars kind of come around a circle and up a little ramp, which shoots them up in the air, and then they sort of descend back down. But you get a nice little pop of air time each time that you come around. And, you know, it was definitely one of those great starter rides for kids to give them that thrill of, you know, coming over the hill of a roller coaster without actually having to ride. They called it a flying coaster, but it definitely was not a roller coaster. It was a powered flat ride, but a really charming one.
The ride will come back in 2022. I wonder if they will do kind of like a color scheme of the actual ride itself to match this logo.
I think that they have some art on their website showing the same sort of color scheme painted onto the ride cars as well.
Yeah, very cool. I've never been to Kennywood, but I have a fridge magnet from there. I don't know how I got it.
If you're in Western Pennsylvania, that's a great one to check out.
Over at Walt Disney World, they released even more augmented reality photo filters through Disney PhotoPass that you can try out to make your photos at the parks even more magical. And some of the effects are really wild.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to make that a pun, but I realized that now that that's a pun.
Yep, there is if you're visiting Animal Kingdom, there are two location specific ones that are especially interesting. One puts an Animal Kingdom safari hat on your head and then has Timon from The Lion King come out and mess with you. And the other one that looks really fun, if you stand in front of Everest, you can use a lens that basically has you attacked by the Yeti in the middle of a snowstorm. Those both look like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
The trick is that you are going to need to invest in Genie Plus for a day in order to use most of these. I think that once you purchase Genie Plus, at least at Walt Disney World, you get to hold on to those lenses, I think, for 30 days or
Okay.
28 days maybe. For a period of time after the day you pay for it, you can continue to use them. And there's also some of these are available free inside of Snapchat too. If you can get your pet to sit still long enough to shoot a video, there's a one based on Lady and the Tramp, which
Oh
lets you
my
eat
goodness.
spaghetti with your dog. So
There are other lenses, like one where you can make Elsa's ice magic yourself, which we have a video of. It's very cool. And then there's some rose gold Mickey Mouse sunglasses. You can pretend to eat a Mickey premium bar and get ice cream all around your mouth. And then there's another one where you can catch Disney popcorn in your mouth as it's being thrown to you, sitting in the hub rest. All very charming. With how busy the parks are, though, I can't imagine ever having the downtime to sit and play with these. But they are very cool. It's interesting to see Disney play more with VR. Here's the pet
I mean,
one
the
that I spoke on
technology is
earlier.
amazing. If you told me 5 years ago that you'd have a phone that would be able to do this kind of, effects live, I mean, just a few years ago, you would have had to render this out overnight in order to create something like this.
Yeah.
And I think there was a question in the chat. Yeah, I think that. John's right that I think it's a 45 days after you purchase it, and most of these you should be able to use outside of the resort. A couple of those, like I said, the Timon and the Everest ones are specific to Animal Kingdom, but I've used a bunch of the filters at home, and they seem to work just as well in my living room as they do in the theme park.
And if you share them on social media with hashtag Disney PhotoPass, there is a chance that you might get featured somewhere. They don't specify where, if it is just on Instagram or a retweet or something, but that's cool if you want to get shared on Disney social media. Gaylord Palms is not hosting ICE this year. If you are familiar with the event in Central Florida, it's like walking into a big freezer full of ice sculptures, and it's very cold, but very cool.
Yes.
And instead, they're offering a new holiday event. Not quite I Love Christmas Movies, but this one is called Mission Save Christmas featuring Elf.
Yeah, if you are a big fan of the Will Ferrell film, this is for you because you basically get to walk through Buddy's story. It's a series of themed rooms, and this time, with the ice thing, you would basically walk into a room, shiver for a few minutes, take a picture if you're camera hadn't completely frozen over, and then hurry on to the next one. Here, you get to go into each room and have like a little interactive experience. You're trying to generate enough Christmas spirit to help Santa's jet engine on his sled get powered up. So you're going to go from the Candy Cane Forest, where you meet Leon the Snowman, to the Gimbel's Department Store. You even get to have a snowball fight in Central Park. Finally, you get to take selfies with Santa's sleigh. And each step, it sounds like you've got some maybe puzzles or interactive things to do. And there'll be an elf around to help you out if you get stuck.
There are 8 rooms in total mm-hmm. that you can experience. And then a clausometer in each room will let you know how much spirit you've generated to help power that sleigh.
Yeah.
But it seems like a lot of good fun for a family outing.
It sounds like a kind of a cross between a walkthrough theme park attraction, little hint of escape room in there. Definitely if Elf is a favorite film of yours, this would be a great way to get immersed in it.
But if you are a fan of Gaylord Palms traditional like tubing, mm-hmm. sledding and stuff, you are in luck because that is still a thing this year. You can head over to their Market Square retail area. You can purchase holiday gifts and decorations. You can go tubing down Snowflow Mountain. I didn't get to do this the one time I went to ice, but I slid down the ice slide on my butt, and it was freezing cold.
Oh, yeah. I highly recommend doing it with the tube and not just on your butt. $22 for unlimited rides, which, you know, for someone who grew up in the Northeast where we had snow for free, that sounds a little wacky. But to be honest, like, if you grew up in Florida and you have never seen natural snow, this is the closest you're going to get to tubing. It's a lot of fun. They do a good job with it.
And then they also have a snowball build and blast area where kids mm-hmm. can put snowballs together. Tickets are $11.99 each for a bucket of snow.
Yeah, I mean, for that much, I at least want some flavored syrup to pour over it and eat it.
Oh, yeah, and then just, yes.
Giant kakigori.
And then they also have gingerbread decorating, Mrs. Claus Christmas traditions with storytelling, holiday sing-along, milk and chocolate chip cookies. And, of course, you get to say hello to Santa and get keepsake photos with packages starting at $35. They also have a kind of scavenger hunt with a decoder ring, which is really neat.
This looks really elaborate. This is not just a quick little thing. You're going to have to invest a couple hours in this, and it's going to take you all over the resort. And that's a huge resort.
Mm-hmm.
So wear your Santa sneakers for that one.
Yes. And bring a sweater or two because it gets mm-hmm. chilly in the market area. And then they have other activities like Sugary Sweet Story Time, Elf Training Academy, and the Christmas Tree Trail. And then they have 2 shows to enjoy, one on stage and one in the atrium. The first is Cirque Spirit of Christmas, which takes place in the resort's interior atrium on select dates on stage with Cirque performers, which is really cool. And then the other show is their Shine Light Show with the lights all throughout the atrium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Christmas Tree Light Show is free for everyone. But this year they are doing tickets for the Cirque Show. And those start at $5, which is pretty reasonable, and go up to only 20.
Yeah. So definitely, if you're looking for something holiday festive to do and you can't get a park pass reservation to Magic Kingdom, definitely check out Gaylord Palms. It's a beautiful resort, and they're pulling out all the stops to give you things to do this holiday.
Yeah. I mean, even if you added up all of the things, I don't think it would be as much as a 3-hour after hours Christmas party ticket at Magic Kingdom, right?
Yeah. And the ones at Magic Kingdom, you don't even get to see the Muppets. So is it really worth it?
No. Be fair to Florida. Bring us the Muppets, especially since I'm pretty sure those were our puppets from our Liberty Square show that they shipped out to California.
The bigger ones.
Yeah.
Be fair to Florida. Come on.
Darn it.
And then our last bit of news before we get to the main attraction. I feel like every week we get something new about the Disney Wish announced. And this one was kind of buried in a press release.
Mm-hmm.
But they're putting a new twist on the traditional Disney Cruise Line Pirate Night.
Yeah, and I was surprised that they didn't mention this during D23 because we did get a whole presentation on the Disney Wish, and they never mentioned that they have updated the very popular Pirates Fireworks Party that they traditionally do on all of the Disney cruise ships. Pirates in the Caribbean is what they call it. And this time, the host is going to be Captain Red, who is the redhead from the Pirates of the Caribbean ride, who was revised from a person being auctioned off to a rum runner. And that persona is going to be leading the party on the deck of the Disney Wish once during each cruise. And it's going to involve live music. There's going to be some piratey stunts, special effects, and it all builds up to the big fireworks show.
Now I have a question about
Yes.
the host. So instead of being specifically Captain Red, I have a photo included here from when she was making appearances at Disneyland.
Disneyland, okay.
I don't know if she still does appearances there, by the way. But they describe Captain Red for the Pirate Party as a descendant of the Redhead and not the
Okay.
actual Redhead.
So she's Captain Red Jr.?
So,
Ca Captain
or
Red the Fourth? The
the
Fourth? Captain Red the Fourth? This is I think this is what we call a distinction without a difference. Like, this is something them writing a backstory that no one who's on the boat will probably actually get. Like,
Yeah.
they'll just be like, it's the redhead from Pirates. That's good enough. Like, we don't need to explain that. No, it's actually her great great granddaughter. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. I guess it's too, because it kind of feels like they're going to put a like a rock star classic rock kind of overlay on this party,
Oh.
and they don't want
So maybe
character
she will
integrity
be a
compromised.
modernized version, like she will be her updated fashion or something. I don't know. We'll
I don't
see.
know either. Yes,
I
but
guess we're gonna have to book that cruise on the Disney Wish to
you
find out.
know, every time they announce something new, I'm like, well, someone's gonna have to go cover it. It might as well be us.
Might as well.
But if you are planning on going on the Disney Wish or just wishing from afar like us, keep an eye out for that because it sounds interesting, if nothing else. And that's everything we had for news in the queue. And before we get to this week's main attraction, let's get a quick word from our sponsor.
Here at Destinations with Character Travel, we offer the best experience with your travels. Need to visit the thrilling Disneyland Resort, Walt Disney World? Maybe lounge about on a Disney cruise or any other major cruise line? No problem. So if you're looking for a stress and hassle-free vacation, visit us at www.destinationswithcharacter.com. Contact us today and let us plan a magical vacation for you and your family.
It's time for the main attraction!
And this week's main attraction, the one crumb of Thanksgiving news that Disney could spare, is not—it's not really good news. Walt Disney World has temporarily paused the sale of all but one of their annual passes.
You know, they very deliberately did not announce this during D23.
Yep.
I seem to remember, going to the big finale of D23 and everything's wonderful at Walt Disney World. Yay,
Turtles are
everything's
back.
great. Churros are back. And then I drive home and I get home and I open my email and I see Walt Disney World has paused annual passes. I actually had a call asking me to go on the news the next
Oh my.
morning to talk about it. And I was like, kind of suspicious that they had an opportunity to mention that at D23, but they sure held that back until everyone had left the room.
That would have been a mood killer. Come on.
Absolutely, absolutely. So here, before anyone panics, if you are a current annual pass holder, you are fine. You can still renew your pass. You are okay. This is sales of new annual passes. And it applies to all the levels except the lowest level, which is the Pixie Dust Pass, which is only available to annual pass holders. I'm sorry, only available to Florida residents who want to become annual pass holders. This is really tough news if you were had a maybe a trip planned here and you were planning on converting a multi-day ticket into an annual pass, most especially if you were or have just recently purchased a Disney Vacation Club membership and were counting on adding an annual pass along with that. Unless you are a Florida resident who is willing to have a whole ton of blackout dates, you're out of luck right now. I guess it is good news because it means that they think that attendance is bounced back enough that they don't need the annual pass holders. You know, they've got the Brits are coming back, the Brazilians are coming back, the international travel, at least for right now, has reopened. And I think they pretty openly said in their you know, financial reports that they are focusing on per capita. They are focusing on how much money each individual guest is spending as opposed to getting more guests in the door. And providing a better experience to the short-term visitors who are just here, you know, once every 10 years or once in a lifetime, as opposed to the annual pass holders who are here every week. That's their focus right now. And, you know, even though they just had a big D23 celebration, you know, honoring... You know, basically shilling to all of their most loyal visitors. It's those people who are spending a lot of money on hotels and restaurants and regular passes as opposed to living locally and, you know, just coming in for a churro or a Dole Whip and leaving.
Yeah.
They're going to go where the money is. So it did not go unnoticed by Universal, who immediately posted on social media that they still had annual passes for sale. So, you know, if you're planning on giving a annual pass to a theme park to someone as a holiday gift, one, please adopt me because you are very generous. and two, go talk to SeaWorld or Universal because they will be happy to take your money.
Yeah, this is a big disappointment as someone who is not in Florida and would only be able to get the Incredipass if I wanted to get one. This is especially disappointing. Also, following up Disneyland's recent annual pass troubles, because they are going through a similar situation where they have, I don't know if they've oversold or they're like this close to overselling.
The interesting thing is that at Disney World, they simply said, we have temporarily paused the sales and they can resume. At Disneyland, they said, we are sold out, which implies that no more will be available until, I don't know, some annual pass holders drop out, some pass away. I mean, what are, there's no sense that like, you know, that's going to come back soon. So that's in Disneyland, we should clarify. They also have multiple levels of passes. I believe the two lower level of passes are still available, but the two highest levels, the highest level had been sold out for a while. And I think the next second highest level is also sold out now.
Yeah. And if you are a pass holder over there, it seems like it's very difficult to even use your pass because there are no days for you to go in the park.
Yeah. It is almost like people stalk the availability calendar, and any time that more availability is dumped out, I know Disneyland, they opened up some more availability for December, and it lasted like an hour or two before they were all snapped up. Walt Disney World, I can't necessarily go to every park I want to on the day I want to. This week, especially around Thanksgiving, stuff was all gone.
Yeah.
But generally, you know, I can pick at least one of the parks on virtually any day at Walt Disney World.
Well, that's good.
But Disneyland, yeah, there were a lot of people who had purchased the top level pass and were barely able to use it because it's just no availability for park pass reservations.
Yeah. And I mean, when you think about how much these things cost, like the top level Walt Disney World pass is $1,300. Like that is an investment.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they're in a tough place because people want to buy it. You don't want to tell people you can't buy this pass, but on the other hand, you don't want to sell them the pass and then have them not be able to take advantage of what's supposed to be included with it.
They've
kind of done it to themselves between the park pass reservations and all these new tiers. They've made the system increasingly confusing. And it's difficult to manage, and I think they thought that the more data that they had, the more control they had, the more they'd be able to plan things out better to their own advantage. But what I think they're finding is that all this complexity makes guests irritable. every time that they put something on pause or mark something sold out or, you know, something isn't available, there's backlash.
Maybe
after all of this complexity and all of these new schemes, they'll finally go back to deciding that the best way is to just price something high and let the market decide which people want it bad enough to buy it.
About that. I don't know if you listened to their Q4 earnings call, but they said that they would rather cut corners on things to save money than to price up things, specifically cutting portions because some people's waistlines would thank them.
That was possibly the most poorly phrased statement in a shareholder conference I've heard in a while. I get what they were saying, but that's not cool to talk that way. If they had phrased it in terms of waste, you know, that they know that, you know, the average guest is only eating 80% of their portion size. And, you know, that's bad for the environment. That's, you know, not responsible. So, you know, they want to reduce portion size for that. That's more sensible than saying, oh, you know, our guests are too big. That's not cool. Universal just implies that by building all of their restraint systems too small for anyone to fit in them, but that's a whole other matter.
Yeah, I told you we would get spicy. I remember going to the parks and not having to make reservations, and for a long time I was naive enough to think that the park passes would only be for the COVID era of the parks, and now that things have basically gone back to normal, whatever that means, they're not going anywhere. And I mean, as someone who doesn't live there, it turns me off from wanting to go, just so I don't have to deal with all of this.
It's tricky because if the park pass reservation system meant that I knew I would go to the park and find reasonable waits and, you know, elbow room, that would be fine. But what they've really done is used it to decide what the absolute minimum staffing they can have at each position is. And they, you know, I feel like the busy days still feel just as busy. That not sure that the park pass reservation system is improving the experience for the guests, but I know it's giving them lots of information that they can use for their staffing matrices to decide just how few people they can call in and how little labor they can spend. I don't see them wanting to give up that information anytime soon, no matter how much hassle it causes for the guests.
When is Disney going to be fun again? I'm just kidding.
You know, it is. I mean, these are very first world problems. We are very, we are super privileged to be able to sit here and complain about this stuff. But, you know, maybe we just go back to the A through the E ticket books and, you know, just let people decide what they want to spend their coupons on. I don't know, maybe the old ways were the best, or maybe we'll just all go full circle eventually.
Yeah. You never know. But that was that's everything that we've got for you this week.
Well, came in under an hour.
Yeah. That's all we can hope for.
Let you go and finish your, I guess today would be Small Business Saturday. So go shop and support some local businesses.
And before we go, I don't have any listener thank yous to share, but I do want to say that our winter issue is coming soon. I just submitted
both of my
columns for it. So keep an eye out for that. You'll be able to pick it up from attractionsmagazine.com/store once it's available.
I think I might have an article in there too.
Well, hey, then you can read both of our columns. There you go.
And I believe that, do we have any listeners this week?
No, we don't.
No. So I can jump right into thanking our sponsor, Destinations with Character Travel. Thank you, as always, for supporting us. And thank you, our listener, for heading on over to Apple Podcasts or whatever other strange service you might get your pods from. And please give us a 5-star rating. It really helps. 4 does not help. If we get a 3-star rating, one of us has to go to the farm. It's very sad. So please, 5 stars only. or leave us a review and give us detailed comments on why you don't think we deserve 5 stars. It's okay. You do you. It's good.
With peace and love, I'm not going to read them. If they're 3 stars, no, thank you.
But we are thankful for all of your reviews and all of your comments. And we would also be thankful if you would follow us and the goodness of Attractions Magazine throughout the week in between podcasts. You can follow me by heading over to theunofficialguides.com, where you can pick up copies of The Unofficial Guide to Universal Orlando and Disneyland 2022 editions. We just got them, and we're shipping it out now. You can also follow me at The UG Series on Twitter or on Instagram at The Unofficial Guides. And Brittany, where can they find you?
You can find me at Brittany Tuttle. That's BRITTANITUTTLE. Yes, it's spelled funny, on Twitter and Instagram. But also every day at attractionsmagazine.com, at attractions on Twitter, at attractions magazine on Instagram, and youtube.com/attractionsmagazine, where you've been hanging out with us for the past hour or so on your Thanksgiving weekend. And we are very thankful. And until next week, I hope you guys stay safe, try something new, but most importantly, have fun. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.